Welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm Ramita Iyer, research analyst at the Institute. The Bay of Bengal is located in the Indo-Pacific region between the Indian subcontinent and Southeast Asia and is marked by abysmal levels of connectivity, missed economic opportunities, and a rise in security risks. Last month, the Center for Social and Economic Progress, CSEP, in New Delhi, released a report titled Connectivity and Cooperation in the Bay of Bengal Region. This report addresses 9 areas of growing interdependence in the Bay of Bengal and proposes solutions to reduce the connectivity cooperation gap. In this episode, I am pleased to be joined by the two editors of the report, Dr. Constantino Xavier, Fellow in Foreign Policy and Security Studies at CSEP and a non-resident fellow at Brookings Institution, as well as Dr. Amitendu Palit, Senior Research Fellow and Research Lead, Trade and Economics at ISAS. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Palit and Dr. Xavier, and congratulations on the release of your report.
Thank you, Ramita.
Thank you, Ramita.
Dr. Palit, one of the striking aspects mentioned early on in the introduction is that the Bay of Bengal was once one of the most connected, integrated regions of the world. It mentions that until the mid-20th century, the Bay of Bengal was the hub of a thriving Indian Ocean region with dense economic, social, and political interdependence. Why is it then that over the decades, the level of intra-regional connectivity has significantly declined?
There is obviously this understanding that, Ramita, you alluded to insofar as the historical connections of the Bay of Bengal region is concerned. But I think what one needs to note is that connectivity by itself as a process has undergone very significant transformations. So when we talk about historical connectivity, we essentially dwell upon the nature of connectivity that served histories and periods of histories by themselves in terms of movement of traders and enabling commerce through a particular way of transportation, mostly the maritime that we are talking about. But even the maritime transportation has experienced very significant transformations over the last 30 to 40 years, and this is probably where the Bay of Bengal region has not been able to keep pace with the degree of transformation that has happened in maritime connectivity in other parts of the world. And the second part of it is that maritime connectivity by itself is not the only content and scope of connectivity that we refer to. There are also supporting land connections, there are also supporting digital connections that are important. And the interesting part is that while the Bay of Bengal does experience a great amount of traffic passing through it in terms of the connections between the two global hemispheres and two parts of the Pacific, the region by itself in terms of the economic geography that we visualize is perhaps not a witness or is perhaps not a space where that much of connectivity has happened. And when we say that, we probably have in our minds a collaborative identity like the BIMSTEC at the back of our minds, and the BIMSTEC countries, which are basically the Bay of Bengal rim countries, which by themselves have not experienced that much of intra-regional connectivity as one might have visualized. And there are a variety of reasons for that. One of them could be the fact that there are not supporting institutional mechanisms which are guiding this process. There is probably not enough political willingness as well to go into the story. But most importantly, I think what we allude to in this report repeatedly, and what Tino, of course, will also be referring to as we go ahead, is the question of purposeful cooperation. Unless there is purposeful cooperation, and unless the cooperation deficit is addressed, perhaps connectivity in the Bay of Bengal Rim and the BIMSTEC area will not be able to advance to the levels that is expected and required of it.
Dr. Palit, could you also elaborate on the opportunities and risks in transport supply chains and the people-to-people connections as it exists today?
The opportunities are obvious. The opportunities are obvious in the sense that connectivity is ultimately the bloodline that supports commerce, and that supports commerce in the sense of not just it being in the movement of goods across regions, but also in terms of the movement of people. And ultimately, the way it shapes in terms of movements of ideas and thoughts, because today's digital connectivity is essentially a seamless idea, a seamless interoperable cross-border idea. Maritime connectivity and land connectivity are also experiencing functional transformations between them. So the bigger challenge over here is that none of these can be thought of exclusive of each other anymore. And the more countries and regions get used to the idea that they have to wholesomely pursue these various elements of connectivity in a multimodal and multifunctional fashion, the opportunities of becoming part of global supply chains and enabling the growth of commerce in that respect by allowing the country and national enterprises, both small and medium enterprises as well as the larger enterprises, to become a part of that global supply chain space is something which is going to produce tremendous opportunities. But the risks, I think, are manifold. There are risks in the sense of jumping headlong into connectivity without actually understanding how connectivity can be managed, because it's not just a question of countries getting connected to each other through a particular line of communication, whether a new shipping route or a civil aviation route. The idea of how to make the best of such connections is also important, and that is probably where we come across instances of unused routes, underutilized segments of traffic, and this is probably arising because the connecting parts of the transport supply chains are themselves not totally aware of the benefits which the increase in connectivity capacities can bring from them. So that is probably the biggest learning that needs to precede the growth in connectivity. And then second, along with increase in transport connectivity comes the challenges of effective regulations. They need to be matched by regulations on border, and the trade facilitation becomes an important subject in this regard, much as the greater understanding of businesses who are trying to benefit from the trade facilitation becomes important as well.
Shifting our focus from the geoeconomic aspects to that of geostrategic considerations, which seems to be another factor contributing to the rapidly changing global context. Dr. Xavier, what do you think are the likely implications of the US-China rivalry, the India-China competition, as well as the existence of extra-regional infrastructure-based initiatives like China's Belt and Road Initiative?
Thank you. Absolutely. You cannot think of the Bay of Bengal in a vacuum, isolated from the rest of the world. In fact, that's Dr. Palut's initial chapter in our report that actually explains how it is impossible to think about achieving economic development in the region without inserting intra-regional supply chains into broader global value chains in terms of trade, investments, financial flows. Now, we all know that globally, of course, the times are turbulent. You mentioned the US-China competition or rivalry, if you want. India and China also are going through a very difficult phase in terms of their engagement. So naturally, all those global competitive and contending relationships are reflected in terms of pressures, in terms of fragmentation tendencies inside the region in the Bay of Bengal between South Asia and Southeast Asia. ASEAN is experiencing that. The European Union is experiencing that. So naturally, also in this region, there are those pressures, that competition that sometimes pose obstacles to cooperative habits. Now, this is all the more challenging in the Bay of Bengal because unlike ASEAN or Europe, Southeast Asia, Europe, in this region, there's a very weak degree of institutionalized cooperation. Institutions are no perfect solutions for cooperation and transnational challenges. But they certainly mitigate these risks of geopolitical, geostrategic competition. So that is certainly a risk. At the same time, I think it's also important to mention, as we highlight in our introduction, that it is we are only experiencing a tremendous focus and connectivity in the Bay of Bengal region because of several precursors to connectivity, including the Belt and Road Initiative, that really animated, if you want to put it nicely, this region and put it into a greater central focus of many actors and partners, whether it's Japan, India, the US, Europe, ASEAN itself. It's that initial catalytical role of the Belt and Road Initiative that, with all its advantages and limitations, really invested in the region through infrastructure investments, financial flows, with all, again, its problems also. But it really, I think, created that development that we're seeing play out now. But the fundamental risk is that as you have this rushing in of different initiatives, not only the Belt and Road Initiative, but India's own Act East and Neighborhood First policy, the importance of BIMSTEC, actors like the World Bank looking at this region more carefully in terms of connectivity, the Europeans becoming more interested, the Australians becoming more interested. As a function of that, sometimes there are costs to cooperation, there's excessive competition. So finding that ideal point where actually there is a healthy competition is, I think, one of the objectives that drove our report and the various policy papers that we were lucky to get from expert authors across the region and located in the region, the authors, tell us how they're looking at this and where they propose concrete solutions in order for this connectivity race not to become conflictual and actually undermining cooperation in this region.
So I want to focus a bit on what you said initially, which is that you can't view the Bay of Bengal region in a vacuum. So in a broader sense, we see that this region is also connected to the Maldivian archipelago, Malaysia, which is in the Malacca Straits, as well as the larger Himalayan belt, which includes Nepal and Bhutan. How do you see countries in the Bay of Bengal region working together to leverage their geography and extend their cooperation with these countries?
Absolutely. I think it's critical to open up the region. And in fact, if you look at the nine papers beyond Dr. Pallett's, the nine K-sectoral other papers, they don't speak about the geostrategic environment necessarily in open terms, but none of them ignore it. They all speak to that, whether it's the paper on facilitated trade corridors by Pritam Banerjee, whether it's looking at Bangladesh and how it's looking at the Bay of Bengal region in terms of sub-regional connectivity and linking sub-regional connectivity to the region, but also to other regions, Southeast Asia, East Asia. The paper on transshipment and ports by Chatumi Kaviratna from Sri Lanka, for example. You cannot think of port development in the region without involving various actors beyond the region and inserting these ports into various shipping linkages that are global and trans-regional, and also non-traditional security, for example, right? We had a major refugee crisis in Myanmar, in fact, several, but the most recent one since 2018 with the Rohingya. You have the securitization of sea lines of communication, concerns about the Malacca Straits, the Chinese Navy deploying more and more in this area. So all of these papers really speak to exactly this point that you're making, that I think all the actors, the authors in this case, but also the stakeholders and decision-making bodies in the Bay of Bengal region are looking at this from a global perspective. Or at least we all argue that they should be looking at this from a much broader perspective. So you mentioned the Maldives, for example. It's not part directly of the Bay of Bengal in a geographic strict sense, but you cannot think of sea lines of communication today linking the major geoeconomic hubs of East and Southeast Asia to the Gulf, Europe, and the Western markets without thinking of the Maldives as an important actor to secure those lines of communication through the Indian Ocean region. You mentioned the Maldives and Indonesia, Malaysia and Indonesia, which are again critical funnel states, if you want, to the Malacca Straits from a shipping perspective, from also a security perspective. And finally, many other actors, ASEAN itself as a one unit of 10 member states, is very interested in the Bay of Bengal and knows that its economic growth prospects are also linked to what's happening to the West, in the Andaman Sea, in the Bay of Bengal, in the huge markets of India and Bangladesh that are developing over the next few decades. Australia is literally not a Bay of Bengal state, but has deep interests in facilitating, in fact has announced an initiative to facilitate connectivity in the Bay of Bengal. Japan has been a major partner helping Bangladesh to develop its first deep sea port, or modern deep sea port now, in the eastern part of Bangladesh. The Europeans, through the European Investment Bank, are looking very closely at the Bay of Bengal region. So therefore, absolutely, this has to be a very open region. It's becoming a more open region. And I suspect that most capitals in the Bay of Bengal today, whether it's Colombo, Bangkok, Sri Lanka, or Jakarta, there is a growing thinking about how to involve these extra-regional actors in the Bay of Bengal region.
Dr. Palit, coming back to something that both of you have mentioned, and which is also a key recommendation across most papers in your report, the question of regional institutions and the role that they can play in fostering connectivity in the Bay of Bengal. What is your reading of initiatives like the Bay of Bengal Initiative for Multisectoral Technical and Economic Cooperation, or BIMSTEC, and the Bangladesh, Bhutan, India, and Nepal Initiative, the BBIN? How have they fared so far, and what more can they do?
I think the role of regional institutions can hardly be overstated in the context of advancing connectivity. That is a point which has often come up in regional connectivity discussions. But I think the way to understand this is also to look at regions in terms of their histories of institution building. And unfortunately, I think in this regard, the Bay of Bengal region doesn't really have a very checkered contemporary history. The instances of effective institution building in the region itself is limited. There could be a variety of factors which might be responsible for this. One can go back to the idea of the SARC and find several examples over there where the SARC as an institution could have performed better, but perhaps has not been able to perform as well as it could have due to political reasons, due to political willingness deficit, due to various other factors. Some of it might have actually brushed off on a structure like the BIMSTEC, because the BIMSTEC is largely South Asia and partly Southeast Asia in terms of its membership. So perhaps that has had a reflection. And I think at the end of the day, there is no denying the fact that a country like India, which is the largest member of a regional construct like the BIMSTEC, has to really play an active role in speeding up the process of regional institution building in this regard. But having said that, I will not completely subscribe to cynicism in this regard, because I think one of the ways in which the BIMSTEC regional efforts can really advance forward, become more purposeful, become recharged, is to bring onto the table the successful experiences that there are internally within the countries. Countries like Sri Lanka, for example, notwithstanding the difficulties that they experience right now, really do have some good institutions to back them up in the areas of maritime connectivity, for example. India has such examples. Thailand is a shining example of good multimodal connectivity facilities. So is Bangladesh. There are good examples, as you mentioned, Ramita, of the BBIN going forward and obtaining some major benefits. And I think these benefits, in terms of their scale and their long-term implications, will become more visible as we advance into the future. But the bigger question, and perhaps the only question in this regard, is that are the constituents of the BIMSTEC template and construct really willing to make it a high priority? If they're willing to make it a high priority within the variety of the arms and legs that it has, trilateral, bilateral, or even plurilateral, like the BBIN, we actually can gain substantially. And perhaps if all these are taken together and the BIMSTEC action plan and the efforts of institutions like ADB are brought together. Even the advances that Tino mentioned have been made by way of the Belt and Road Initiative that reflect upon the Bay of Bengal region and its connectivity capacity. If we bring all those together, then perhaps the sum total will not be as bad as we would expect it to be. But having said that, there's really the need to charge a specific institution or a club of institutions within the BIMSTEC group to take this agenda purposefully forward.
Finally, to wrap up the podcast, Dr. Xavier, what are some of the positive trends to look out for in the region which can help in improving connectivity in the coming years?
Thank you, Ramita. I think I'll stick to what Dr. Pallett was mentioning in relation to BIMSTEC, an organization that's now over 20 years old, has been around for a long time, but is, I think, experiencing positive momentum. I think we should expect some very good developments in the next few months. But let me explain that this is also, interestingly, one of the main conclusions of our report. You know, as we gathered recommendations by authors, not so much on what to do, we all know what the connectivity ideals look like. For example, railways or ports on the transportation sector. We focused more on the how. How should we achieve this potential for cooperation that has been missing and lacking for decades in the Bay of Bengal and becoming a liability in many ways for these states' sustainable agendas and economic modernization objectives? And one of the answers that is consistent in most, if not all, the papers is that regional institutions, in particular BIMSTEC, is a key platform to achieve this. Now, this doesn't mean that there are many roads to the same objective. There, as Amitendu, I think, mentioned, there are bilateral initiatives that are important. There are trilateral initiatives, for example, the India-Myanmar-Thailand road or highway, and then the possible equivalent in terms of railways on which Riya Sinha contribute one chapter, for example. These are trilateral initiatives, but there can be also several others, and in particular, a regional organization like BIMSTEC. And let me briefly explain why I think there is positive momentum for many of at least these recommendations to be put forward and find fertile ground within BIMSTEC. You know, for 22 years, you had three summits at BIMSTEC until 2018. And the last 5 years, you've had the same number, three summits that have been held now, 2018, Kathmandu, then in Colombo, 2022. And hopefully, I'm assuming that this year now, the Thailand as a chairman of BIMSTEC will be able to achieve its objective to hold a summit in Bangkok. This is a major achievement because if you meet at the highest level and that frequency increases, you will have that political leadership naturally replicated in successes of the bureaucratic policy-making realms. Reducing the working groups of BIMSTEC to 14, from 14 to 7 was a major achievement, again, of the last few years, the last year or two, that now you finally have a consolidation, a focus on 7 areas rather than spreading yourself very wide at BIMSTEC and doing 14 areas. The frequency and intensity of the ministerial meetings, the senior official meetings, the new BIMSTEC Permanent Working Committee, these are very important instruments. You know, as you intensify the frequency of meetings between bureaucracies, between technical experts, you will naturally see an agenda gaining pace and I think cooperation becoming a reality. So I see a lot of positive trends there and hope that we'll have also some better news towards the end of the year if this sixth BIMSTEC summit takes place in Thailand.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Xavier and Dr. Pallett, for being on the podcast. You were listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also keep up with latest happenings through social media. We're on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram.